My first boyfriend was 2 years older than me, and as high school couples often do, we left things ambiguous when he went off to college. When he called to tell me that he was dating someone new, I missed at first that that meant he was breaking up with me. I was excited that he was excited about this new person. I couldn't wait to meet her. I knew even then that this was not how most people's brains worked, but it was clear to me, even at 16, I would have had no problem sharing him if everyone involved was cool with that. Several years later, I learned from the Savage Love Sex Advice column that there was a name for this feeling, polyamory, or ethical non-monogamy. And there was a growing number of people out there who felt the same way. A survey in 2021 estimated that 5% of the US population is polyamorous. 20 years later, I am still polyamorous, meaning I'm a person who has had a lot of practice with love. And I'm part of a faith that has made a declaration that we are putting love at the center of our theology. And this month's theme is liberating love. So, what might polyamory have to teach us about the spiritual practice of love? UUs have been moving towards naming love as our theological core for a long time, even though you might have only started hearing about it recently in the context of proposed changes to Article 2 and the 7 or 8 principles. For those not steeped in denominational politics, I'm talking about the document that attempts to define what it means to be a Unitarian Universalist, and which the governing body for all UUs uses to guide their work. But 7 or 8 principles is a long list. I'm a lifelong UU, and if pressed, I could probably remember 4-ish.
Yes.
So the reason to revise Article 2 is to more powerfully support modern UUs, to take what we already believe and draw a roadmap to a better world. The folks charged with updating the document about what it means to be a UU looked at what the 7/8 existing principles had in common, and they found love. We can trace this theology of love to our Universalist ancestors. Universalists asserted that there was no way that an all-loving God would damn any of God's own people to eternal punishment and torment. Thus, salvation was universal. Reverend Sarah Smalley tells a story about Hosea Ballou, a major theologian of early 19th century Universalism. He was traveling through the New Hampshire hills with a Baptist preacher, and they were arguing theology as they traveled. At one point, the Baptist looked over and said, "Brother Ballou, if I were a Universalist and feared not the fires of hell, I could hit you over the head, steal your horse and saddle, and ride away, and I'd still go to heaven." Hosea Ballou looked over at him and said, "If you were a Universalist, the idea would never occur to you." This focus on love came not just from ministerial leaders doing theology, but from survey data. As far back as the 1970s, UUs have named love as being the most important thing, both as a means to an end and as an end goal. Arguably, our most successful social justice fight was literally about love, not just the general goodwill towards other beings kind of love that you might expect from a church, but defending the idea that the romantic and sexual love of same-sex couples was just as worthy of societal and legal recognition as that of straight couples. Here's what the most recent, very close to final draft of Article 2 says about love. "Love is the power that holds us together and is at the center of our shared values. We are accountable to one another for doing the work of living our shared values through the spiritual discipline of love." Love is the power that holds us together. We are accountable to one another. I like those lines, so I repeated them. I don't know about you, but that feels like a powerful way of stating what I believe and what I want the world to look like. Yes, it might take a while for us to get on the same page about what it means and what being accountable to one another looks like, but I'm excited to start. Love is a lot of things, but it is first and foremost a feeling. Let's take a moment to remember what love feels like in our bodies. I invite you to think of something or someone that you love. It could be a partner, family member, a pet, or even a place, a food, or a hobby. Maybe it's a memory of first falling in love. I'll give you a second to get there. Okay, where does that love show up in your body? Is it in your face, in your throat, in your heart or your rib cage? What about in your belly? For me, love shows up in all of these places. When I was brainstorming words for how love feels, I came up with both ache and giddiness. What different feelings those are. Love can be both the worst and the best feeling in the world. One of the things that I like best about polyamory is that each relationship I have with another person is allowed to find its true and authentic expression. We're not following a societal script. That means we have to check in with ourselves about how things actually feel. It's given me the opportunity to test out many selves and gather data on who I am and what it means to live a good life. It has meant surrounding myself with people with whom I share deep feelings of intimacy, whether or not that includes sex or living together or any of the other things that people bundle with romantic partnership. And it allows my primary relationship to find more of its true and authentic expression, because we don't feel pressure to get all our needs met by one person. I don't need to bring my spouse to protests. He doesn't need me to listen to all 300 hours of his favorite D&D actual play podcast. What this means for a spiritual practice of love is that anyone could be a beloved with a capital B, someone with whom I share material support and connection and intimacy, and they share it with me. For me, it takes the concept of beloved community from an abstract future ideal to something that exists in small, imperfect ways all around me. It's not one directional me with my greater privilege giving or serving or doing the work, but not letting the work change me. It's relational and it's messy. My beloveds and I get to know ourselves and hold our boundaries and pursue our best lives, even if that takes us in different directions. And that doesn't lessen the preciousness of the impact we've had on each other's lives. For example, my spouse and I love blues dancing, which can be a very physically intimate dance. There's a lot of polyamory in the blues dance community, but there's also just a lot of giving each other rides or hosting out-of-town dancers on the strength of a single song's acquaintance or less. The other important lesson that I bring to my spiritual journey from polyamory is the saying, love is infinite, time is not. Polyamorous people can really get into trouble by overcommitting. If we're finding the true and authentic expression of multiple relationships, taking care of ourselves, doing something for others, all while trying not to get crushed under capitalism, it adds up to a really full calendar. Just look at Six Dinner Sid. You can't have all the good parts of relationship without the work. You can't have the meals and scritches without also making time for the vet visits. And since justice is love made visible, this is a lesson that you use would do well to apply to our work for justice. There are so many worthy struggles that need our support, but it's not possible to be an expert in all of them and to spend a meaningful amount of time taking meaningful action. So many of us, myself included, sign up for too many things, get overwhelmed, and feel frozen and ineffective. I started to change when I realized that I would never treat a date the way I was treating a movement, because I would have to look them in the face and account for my actions. I mentioned earlier that love hurts. And that is definitely still the case in polyamory as well. More so even. At first, it seemed like polyamory could inoculate me against heartbreak. After all, I didn't have to go through a breakup in order to date someone new. And if I did break up with someone, I would still potentially have a support network of other partners. But then I had two breakups on the same day, both coming out of nowhere from what I thought were good and stable relationships. It was exactly as awful as it sounds. It took a year of therapy and briefly no longer identifying as polyamorous to get over. And I learned that the point is not to never have your heart broken or to have such a great life that a breakup doesn't hurt. The point is to learn how to feel your feelings, to find hitherto unknown reserves of strength, to give yourself the love that other people may or may not be able to. Cracks are how the light gets in, etc. Throughout this service, I've been highlighting songs from Carcy Blanton. She's one of my favorite singer-songwriters, partly because she's not monogamous. There were times in my life when I was desperate to see myself reflected in popular media. I wanted guidance on how to be a good and whole and ethical person, while also embracing a way of loving that was still pretty fringe and not well understood. She has some great songs about non-monogamy, and she weaves them in with songs about politics and solidarity, and in a way that feels really aligned with my own faith journey. Seeing her be so unapologetically herself, while also resonating with so many people, has inspired me to take the risk of sharing these insights about polyamory with all of you. If this feels like a challenging way to look at love for you, I get that. This is just what works for me. It gets me excited about being on this faith journey because I can look back over my life and see how far I've already come in my ability to love, to be good to the people I love, and to love myself. I think that every UU should do some discernment about their own relationship with love. So we're going to do a little bit of that now, or I invite you to join me in doing that. What role do you feel like love plays in your faith? If it's not at the center, as Article 2 would like to place it, what is at the center? What does a spiritual discipline of love look like to you? How often do you feel like you practice it? What might it mean to be part of a community of people who are all practicing a spiritual discipline of love? Ultimately, I'm grateful to polyamory for giving me more chances than the average person to practice love. Even if you're not polyamorous, there are a few things you can do to practice it too. Practice extending more love to your family, your friends, yourself. Hold that love lightly, without control. Trust that it will be returned. Notice what it does to you to offer love more freely. When confronted with a social justice issue that makes you feel pain or numbness or anger, think about it. What it would be like to act from a place of love. Treat the folks being affected as though they are real members of your beloved community. And then let that love move you into action. Thank you.